Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers? Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
You can always let us know if you are drinking with lawmakers at 844-967-2789.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Well, beyond our beer, brats, cheese, sports teams, Wisconsin is also known for our outdoors. Literally, the great outdoors takes place in Wisconsin. It wasn't filmed in Wisconsin, but it's supposed to be here. And if you watch the movie, you know it wasn't filmed here because there's a lot of mountains that we don't have.
Yep.
But for a long time, we've been a leader in protecting our natural resources. But big shock. You know, kind of a trend. State tax funding for conservation, public lands, and the environment has been in decline for a little bit now. So our guest this half hour is Jason Stein, who is the research director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And his latest article, This Land is Our Land, talks about how much we enjoy our outdoors, how we've historically funded it, why we're not funding it so much anymore or right now, and what we could do to change that. So welcome back to the show, Jason.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So we were talking a little bit at the break. You are an outdoorsman, right?
Yep. I've been hunting and fishing since I was 5 or 6 years old. I grew up in Kansas where you could legally hunt at 5 or 6 at that time. You couldn't in Wisconsin at that time, although you can now under certain circumstances. So yeah. I've been doing this a while.
This is a side note, but what was your best hunt at 5? Like, what kind of stuff were you bringing home?
It would be like, you know, I'd mostly just be with my dad, but he might occasionally get into a situation where I could pot a rabbit with a .22, you know? And so, and then mom would make a rabbit pot pie, which I liked very much.
Oh, can't say I've had it.
Well, you know. It's worthwhile.
But I guess, so as far as, I guess, either anecdotally or using data, how do we even kind of wrap our heads around, besides just instinctively knowing Wisconsin likes our outdoors? We have so much fresh water between our Great Lakes, with Superior, Lake Michigan, Mississippi River, all of the lakes in between, hunting, fishing, camping, like there's so many different things, but like, how would you as a research director try to quantify how much Wisconsin loves the outdoors?
Well, it's a great question. And I think in some ways it's difficult, right? Because there's a lot of things that are very difficult to track. Let's say if you go, you love to bird, right? You go birding, you go up, you don't get a license from any government agency to do that, right? And so it's been hard to track it. I think with cell phone data, we're going to start to quantify that better and better in future years. But, you know, thinking about, you know, ranging from snowmobiles, where we're number one in the country for registrations, to, you know, hunting and fishing, we certainly are among a top 10 states for both in the country. Mm-hmm. Kind of a fun fact, out-of-state hunting licenses were second only to Idaho in the entire country, right? Which is pretty amazing, really. But you think about there's really, for more than 100 years, there's been a tradition of people from Illinois and Minnesota and other places coming to Wisconsin, right, to recreate in a whole variety of ways, hunting and fishing, just hiking, camping, all these things. I mean, the roots of this go very, very deep, and they're vital to our economy. You know, almost $9 billion in value is added to Wisconsin's economy, almost 90,000 jobs from outdoor recreation alone. That doesn't even count other related industries like the timber industry that are sort of also rely on our natural resources. And then our state GDP is certainly much more of it in Wisconsin is tied to outdoor recreation than it would be nationally.
And that's what I think is super interesting, is because it's one thing for the like touchy-feely stuff of people who like to be outdoors and I think the recognition of wanting to protect it, wanting to make sure it's not polluted, but it's also the economics of it, of what it adds to our GDP for whether it's tourism or, you know, fees and can't, you know, if you go camping, you pay to park and everything like that. But also how many jobs, when I read that in the report, that it's almost 90,000 jobs between the DNR and parks and all of the stuff to kind of make this work, of the economics of it also makes sense as far as why this is something that makes Wisconsin unique and like continue to protect it and fund it. So I guess then moving on to like historically, how have we funded conservation and parks and our environment?
Sure. And let me just to loop back to what you said before, you know, in the world of remote work, right, places are almost sort of fungible. And we have to think about, I think, in this world where white collar workers at least can work from anywhere, why do you want to be here in Wisconsin? What is a tie to this physical place that is Wisconsin that also can serve as sort of an economic anchor? And clearly the outdoors are one of those things. So then to respond to your question, historically, in terms of how we funded the outdoors, you know, when we're looking at, you know, fish and wildlife and outdoor recreation and things like that, a big anchor for us has been hunting and fishing license sales, which at the state level, and then those also bring in federal matching dollars. And so we're among one of the top 10 states in the country for that. But that is a little bit of an oil well, as many, particularly on the hunting side, people age out of that sport and are not being replaced at the same rate.
Oh, is that true? Is it not? Oh, yeah. The replacement rate also applies to hunters. I did not know that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, it's a physical activity, right?
Yeah.
And particularly something like deer hunting. And so people get to 65, 70 years old, and there's just a big cliff in terms of participation. And, you know, we have seen people that sort of the eat local movement, you know, that has brought some new people into the sport. You know, when you go to learn to hunt classes, women are often, you know, the biggest category there. And so there are some like non-traditional participants coming into the sport, but not at the kind of rates that you would need to have that funding be, you know, sustainable at current levels. Another big program that we've had for decades, more on the capital project side, is the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund, which essentially uses borrowing as its main funding stream to finance both land purchases, purchases of easements on land to protect it against development, and capital projects so people can enjoy the outdoors. So those be, you know, roads, bridges, boat ramps, you know, bathrooms, things like that. That and this program operates at both a state level for like state DNR lands, plus local public lands, and even private conservation groups can also partner with the program to do projects.
We're talking to Jason Stein, who is the research director for Wisconsin Policy Forum, about his new research project, or This Land Is Our Land. It's talking about the past and future of conservation funding in Wisconsin. And so when did the shift start to happen as far as this kind of being our legacy as Wisconsin and putting such an emphasis on conservation and the outdoors to kind of the shift towards not prioritizing it as much when it comes to funding?
Sure. I mean, I think maybe the easiest place to look at for this shift is in the state parks. So if you look back into the up to the mid-90s, it was in state statute that the parks were half funded by state tax dollars, which get referred to as GPR. And today, you know, in 2015, 17, in that range, we had sort of completed a process where over the decades we've gone from being half funded by tax dollars to now there's no GPR funding, there's no tax funding within the state park system. It's essentially financed through user fees. And we are today, if you look at state parks, we are last in the nation in funding for operations per visit. We're second to last. Correct. And if you look at it instead in terms of funding per capita, we're, I think, second to last. So, you know, we really rank very low on that metric, although our state parks continue to be visited quite frequently. You know, they had a huge uptick in visits, both from people within the state and outside the state during the pandemic. We do still in Wisconsin have pretty robust funding for our parks at the local level, okay. But you know, local governments, so that when you combine state and local, we're more middle of the pack, but local governments also have funding challenges in recent years, and parks are sort of a, you know, parks are not maybe seen as essential in the way that, you know, fire protection is seen as essential. And so, you know, that's, I think, a good example of how, you know, funding has shifted and eroded over time. And, you know, is something that I think in the wake of the pandemic deserves another look. If you look at what happened during the pandemic, you know, the outdoors were kind of the only recreation game in town for a while.
And so they were sort of, Does golf fall under this? Is that an outdoor activity? Does the DNR fund that?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And so we, you know, we saw this huge uptick in participation during the pandemic, you know, in visits. That has dropped somewhat, but remained elevated versus pre-COVID. And so I think, you know, that in many people's minds, including my own, you know, really put our public lands and outdoor recreation in the foreground to think about, well, what role do we want this to play broadly in society going forward? And are there things that we need to do to ensure that that can happen?
Absolutely. Well, when we come back from the break, Jason Stein will still be here because I wanted to ask, this feels like a bipartisan issue because it's something that we all enjoy and benefit from. So talking about some of the solutions or options that you guys came up with of how we could fund this, and maybe talk a little somewhat about the political will to do so. So our guest is Jason Stein, who is the research director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
I'm all about the data, about the data, more data. I'm all about the data, more data. I'm all about the data, more data. I'm all about the data, more data. Here, it's pretty clear.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bride, Shane Vatnair, with another great data parody song.
There just aren't enough opportunities to use them, which is why I'm always excited when we have the Wisconsin Policy Forum on.
And we do. Jason Stein, Research Director of Wisconsin Policy Forum, is here. And we are talking about the thrilling topic of conservation funding, but it's super important. And it's something that we will regret when it's not here, as far as our ability to so easily take advantage of Wisconsin's natural resources and beauty and be able to get outdoors easily, and whether it's lakes or camping and hiking and snowmobiling and so much stuff that is like quintessential Wisconsin stuff, that if we don't take care of it, we will lose it. And so I wanted to shift to some of the options that you lay out in the report as far as how we could go about continuing to make sure these resources get funding.
Sure, absolutely. So, I mean, we offer a whole range of things that you can do, from easy to relatively easy lifts to really, you know, difficult to pass policies. They range from just increasing hunting and fishing and other license fees, you know, which many of those haven't been increased on people like me since 2005 or six. You know, so that's one option. But, you know, increasing fees is to some extent doubling down on our current day reliance on fees, that that's sort of already where, what we rely heavily on. You know, other options, you could certainly look at, you know, providing some state income and sales tax dollars for conservation, which has, you know, eroded over time. The state budget is in a remarkably good position right now. Yeah. So that's a possibility today in a way that it wouldn't have been 10 years ago. You know, we could look at outdoor gear sales. So, you know, right now, if you buy hunting equipment, if, you know, if you buy ammunition, if you buy a fishing rod, there is going to be federal excise taxes on those items that are going to, you know, go into essentially fund conservation at the state and federal level. You know, right now, if you buy binoculars to go birding, or if, you know, if you buy camping equipment, let's say, you know, is not the case. So that's a possibility. You know, we could have a state sales tax that would seek to do that. And you could do it by increasing the sales tax, or you could do it by simply allocating some of current sales tax dollars. Minnesota has a portion of their sales tax that goes towards outdoor recreation, conservation, parks. And that's been, you know, in Minnesota, a pretty popular program. The other thing that is kind of an interesting model is Colorado offers tax credits for people that donate easements to protect against development on land. And so, you know, that's essentially a way of using the tax code as well as private land to ensure that there is, you know, places protected against development. So that's another model, and that might have, you know, my more bipartisan support. You know, the legislature, you know, some members of the legislature have been pretty skeptical of the stewardship program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just simply using public money to set aside public lands. So, you know, the Colorado model represents a different approach that policymakers could also look at.
So speaking of policymakers, I guess, you know, to me, it seems obvious as far as how can you be against wanting to preserve, like I said before the break, this feels like it should be a bipartisan issue as far as people who enjoy the outdoors, whether you are a conservative hunter, fisherman type person, not that there's not liberals and other people, you know what I'm saying? Like different archetypes, sure, of people who range the political spectrum, but who enjoy the outdoors. And so I guess, like, who is against, as much as you could, maybe that's not the right term, but like, allocating more funding or finding a solution for this to make sure, is there it more about how we do it, or is there actually people who are like, this isn't worth the priority because we should be doing more development, or we should be having this land go to other things because of other economic reasons? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, I mean, you know, as you noted, we live in a state that is really well known for conservation funding. I mean, figures like Aldo Leopold, John Muir, Gaylord Nelson, I mean, these are giants of conservation, hail from Wisconsin. You know, so, and, you know, look at the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. You know, Warren Knowles was a Republican governor. Mm-hmm. So there has been in the past bipartisan support for this. You know, at the same time, there is definitely concern from some members of the legislature about the amount of public land in some parts of the state. Wisconsin, overall, about 14% of our state is open to public access. That's less than the 25% nationally. But, you know, many Western states have much more public land than Wisconsin does. Mm-hmm. You know, that said, for a state east of the Mississippi River, we have quite a bit. And some parts of the state, like northern Wisconsin, have, you know, a very high percentage of certain counties are public lands. And so there's a discussion about, you know, what is the right level. And so that's where you tend to see some of the opposition is in northern Wisconsin, you know, from some northern Wisconsin representatives. You know, at the same time, What are the industries in northern Wisconsin? Well, timber, you know, tourism, you know, those are real mainstays of their economy, and public lands play an important role in supporting both those industries. So, I mean, I think that is where the tension has come from. And I don't know that I'm fully answering your question, but I think that is what we have to sort of grapple with as a state.
Absolutely.
Progress on this issue.
Well, Jason Stein, thank you so much. This was super interesting. I'm excited to continue to follow this and continue to have you back on for your next report. But Jason Stein is the Research Director for Wisconsin Policy Forum. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. An accountability campaign that speaks out against a MAGA extremist agenda look like? Well, we're all about to find out, because our next guest is Laura Packard, who is a cancer survivor and serves as executive director of Healthcare Voter and as a Courage for America spokesperson. And Courage for America is an accountability campaign speaking out against MAGA extremist agenda. And so welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
And so can you tell us just a little bit more of what, like, I guess that's the question. Like, what does Courage for America do? What does this actually look like as like an accountability campaign for an extremist agenda?
Well, Courage for America started happening about less than a year ago, understanding that there could be a change in control of the U.S. House and that the MAGA extremists would try to push their agenda against the interests of most Americans. So one of the things they are doing this year was a nationwide bus tour. And we just recently stopped in La Crosse to hold Representative Derek Van Orden, in particular, responsible for some of his MAGA rhetoric and for threatening the interests of Wisconsin families.
I'm assuming he did not show up.
He was invited, did not show up.
So this is what I had heard as far as the bus tour. So it was 13 cities?
Something like that.
Something like that.
I lose count.
So, and did you go to each city?
I was on most of them.
Wow.
We started in Bakersfield and we finished in Washington, D.C. So it pretty much was coast to coast.
And so what were the, with each stop, kind of paint the picture as far as like who you were talking to, what were kind of the sentiments and what were some of the conversations that came out of it?
Well, each stop featured local, real people and their personal stories, why they are at risk with this political games in Washington, because everyone listening has somebody or is somebody that depends on Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the Affordable Care Act, food stamps, veterans benefits. Like, we are all at risk one way or another. And so we were telling our personal stories to make sure that representatives hear from us, because, you know, Van Orden is not easy to talk to.
I feel like, Greg, you've tried to tweet at him a couple times. Has he ever responded back?
No, none of them have the guts to get back to me, little Greg Bach, with my 1,200 followers.
And so besides, obviously, Derek Van Orden in Wisconsin, but who were some of the other representatives that you were trying to get their attention on in these different stops? I'm sure Kevin McCarthy being one of them, being the Speaker of the House.
Yes.
But who were some of the other people? And was there any success as far as them responding?
Well, nobody showed up to any of our events. Nobody would sign the promise to commit to not cutting our benefits. We went through Durango, so Lauren Boebert did not show up. We went through Ohio. Jim Jordan did not show up. Elise Stefanik in New York did not show up, and many other in the cast of horrors.
Greg. Yeah, and and so who did show up, I guess, as far as like the response from people who showed out, people who have signed, as far as like trying to connect the dots, as far as, like you said, this is something that affects either directly everyone or at least someone that everyone knows.
Well, we had people from all walks of life at each stop. You know, we had teachers talking about the importance of school lunches, of making sure that kids are able to learn. We had veterans talking about how they served our country and they need to keep accessing their benefits. We talked with seniors explaining how they live on Medicare and Social Security and what would happen if they lost those benefits. So we had all kinds of people at every stop sharing the stories that their representatives will not listen to.
We're talking to Laura Packard, who is a spokesperson for Courage for America, and they are just, I guess it's not over because it's the back off our benefits bus tour is ending in D.C. That's the end, right?
Yes, we just finished on Monday with a big event in Washington, okay. D.C., which featured Representative Larson. And also, we hand-delivered nearly 200,000 signatures of people who signed the petition.
Oh, wow. And so now that that part is over, I guess the better question is, because you're executive director for Healthcare Voter, you're spokesperson for Courage for America. Why was it important for you to be a part of bus tour? Like, what was it about the work that you've done or your experience as far as being a part of Courage for America and the Back Off Our Benefits tour? I think she's just wrong pipe. Yep. But we'll just talk for a second. Had you heard about this at all?
I've not. No, this is all new stuff to me. It's very interesting. And like for me, the question I would have is, you know, the connection people have. You know, no surprise the leaders don't show up, but like the different opinions of people coming to these events and saying, you know, this is who I am. This is where I come from. But these are important, especially military benefits.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, too, Laura, and I'm curious about this. I think we use the wrong word and we allow our politicians to call these benefits entitlements. Why am I not entitled to something I've been paying in my entire working life? That's not an entitlement. That is what I am due. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to change and change that the phrasing of that, because it's inaccurate.
Benefits. We earn them, and they're threatening to take them away.
And I actually haven't stayed up on this enough as much as I should, as far as, because I think I looked at the break just now as far as, because this is basically tied into the debt ceiling. And the ability of like what the Kevin McCarthy, and they're trying to hold us hostage as far as not paying the debt that we've already signed up for.
Mm-hmm. That we already spent. Yeah.
Yeah. In order to be able to cut some of this stuff in the budget. Right, Laura?
Exactly. Wow, MAGA Republicans have gotten to me.
Water down the windpipe will really get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
This just proves that there are some design flaws in the human body. You shouldn't be able to choke to death while drinking water. It just that's a mistake. It was a mistake.
Yes, and these benefits are critical. We heard people around the country talk about how much it means to them. And they don't care. They're playing politics.
And so I guess coming back as far as your personal story, because you're a cancer survivor. And so was that kind of the beginning of your political engagement of why this matters so much to you?
Yes. The Affordable Care Act saved my life. I'm healthy, apart from the coughing.
Apart from the coughing.
And the slight choking yes. issue, but otherwise everything is fine.
Yes. So I'm a cancer survivor, and I wouldn't be here today without the Affordable Care Act. And that's one of the things that they're threatening.
And so as far as, you know, what are you hoping for as far as these debates? Like, what is an ideal outcome knowing that the makeup of the House is what it is, as far as continuing to put pressure on some of our representatives, but as far as what the spending could look like? Especially because I just know of how many things, not necessarily got cut, but all of the expansion, all the extensions that were happening during the pandemic, whether it's food share, Medicaid, are now coming to an end. And so as far as reallocating in a post-COVID world, what are some of the asks for either the tour or for Courage for America or even Healthcare Voter?
Well, they need to do their job and vote for a clean deficit, which is something that they've done before. and stop threatening our benefits as part of this political games. They don't have to do this. They're choosing to do this. They're choosing to make people afraid of whether they're going to be able to still get their Social Security check. They could stop this right now. They could vote for a clean bill right now, but they're choosing not to. And so we're going to hold them accountable.
And I guess that's the thing that I don't quite understand the political, like you say, they're playing political games with people's lives, literally their health, their lives, how they survive. And that is, again, not something, that's not owning the libs, right? This is not, it's not just liberals and people who vote for Democrats that receive these benefits. And right. So I guess in the conversations you've had with people, how much do conservatives or Republicans that you talk about, that you talk to, understand that this would affect them too? And does that change their mind about anything in your experience?
Well, this affects everybody, and it shouldn't be a political issue, because everyone knows someone who's on Medicare or Social Security or served and is a veteran. So this affects red states and blue states, mm-hmm. red districts and blue districts. This affects everybody. So I'm not sure that people really understand yet that they're on the chopping block too. Regardless of your political party, they're threatening your earned benefits right now.
And I guess that's, go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say, so like when you have these bus stops, these rallies, these getting together with people, do you have Republicans, conservatives coming to these events saying, I'm a Republican and I need these benefits and I need my leaders to listen to us?
Yes. And we've had speakers that are of all political persuasions, all religions, all walks of life, because this shouldn't be a political issue. And they're turning it into one.
844-967-2789 if you ever want to join the conversation, either via text or on the phone. We have Ron from Milwaukee is joining us. Ron, what do you want to say?
Hi, just to add, jump on the pile a little bit. My wife and I took Obamacare for about 2 years between a buyout at the companies we worked at and until we were eligible for Social Security. It was terrific, and it was a good value, and I'm sure it kept a lot of people out of trouble. We could have afforded a private individual health insurance plan, but they were five figures a year. It was ridiculous. As for, at least the good ones, as for the debt ceiling, it's worthwhile noting, and this may have been mentioned, that in the past several years, whenever the debt ceiling is about to be reached and the Republicans were in charge of Congress, the debt ceiling increase just sailed through. They didn't have any problems with authorizing it under their own watch. So that tells you that this is highly political. And what they're trying to do here is make Democrats own this issue. But the other half of it is, why would Democrats want to own this issue? The debt ceiling is for stuff that was paid. We're raising the debt ceiling to raise extra money to pay off debt we accrued during, for example, the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. So there's like, you know, they ran up $7 or $8 trillion worth of debt then. That was mostly before COVID and before the, you know. So they don't want to pay for what they've already agreed to spend. And, you know, that's like if you went down to a store and you had a bill at the store and you said, look, I know I owe you $1,000, but I don't want to pay it. I mean, I just don't want to pay it.
This was a mistake. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for the call, Rod. Yeah. I saw that recently as far as, I think Kevin McCarthy had some quote. It's like, well, if you had your kid who was just spending his credit card, spending on your credit card, you'd sit them down and you'd talk about, you know, how we're going to fix this. And it's like, well, yeah, but you wouldn't not pay the debt. Like, you wouldn't just let the interest accrue and let your kid's credit score go to the toilet.
I love it when Republicans compare government spending to family spending. I love that. It's like, yeah, oh, does your family have 238 departments in it and, you know, a million workers? Oh, okay. All right, tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Tell me more about the complexities of your family budget. Yeah.
Well, and like Ron said, too, when a Republican is in office, there's no problem with raising the debt ceiling. None whatsoever. Whoosh, done. Everything is good. Let's move on.
And now these benefits are being weaponized.
Yeah. Go ahead, Laura.
Yep, and Ron had it exactly right. This is about debt that we've already, we've already accumulated under the Trump years. And if they want a better budget, then pass one. Where's the Republican budget?
Absolutely. Well, in the couple minutes that we have left, Laura, is where can people find you and or get more information on Courage for America? We only have about a minute.
Well, Courage for America tour is already done, but join us at courageforamerica.org for sign up for our email list, future events. And you can find me, Laura Packard, on all the social medias.
Perfect. And I will link all of that to our show notes. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, Laura.
Every day you'll see the dust. You love magic bus. I drive my baby in my magic bus.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. He is Greg Bach. And the skies have just opened up.
Yeah, it is.
oh, my gosh.
It's pouring in downtown Waukesha. Got a little lightning action going on, too.
Like we got some weather.
Weather. I got to miss the weather. I got the worst of both worlds because it was colder in California than Wisconsin when I got there. And then, but I did get to miss, I guess it wasn't the worst of both worlds because I did miss the snow.
Yeah. It was a crazy weekend.
Sunday felt like a punishment.
Yeah.
For it was like the punishment for your gluttony of the good weather the day before.
Yeah. It felt like oh, there's a God. He is wrathful.
Did you see, who's the actor who played, oh my gosh, I'm going to totally whiff this. The Reno 911 Dangle.
Thomas Lennon?
Yes. Is he from Wisconsin?
I don't know.
He had a viral video on TikTok that he is in Wisconsin. It's snowing in the background.
I think he lives here.
And it was so funny, but I was caught off guard because I was like, he lives in Wisconsin?
He's from Oak Park, Illinois.
Okay. But it was basically like, ask your psychiatrist about living in Wisconsin. If living in Wisconsin is for you. And then he paused it and he goes, or for anybody. Because it's just like dealing with that once again.
He has a home in Lake Geneva.
Look at that.
Yep.
Huh.
You know who else lives here? Neil Gaiman.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, okay.
844-967-2789. We have CJ on the phone from Beaver Dam. We were talking about the debt ceiling and why it's always such an issue when Republicans are in control. CJ, what do you want to say about the debt ceiling?
Well, and I just want to say, until we tie their health benefits to any form of our health benefits, like I'm a veteran, so I've got health benefits for life. So until they're in jeopardy with the debt ceiling, as well as the rest of the nation, we're not going to get anything accomplished with politicians and suits in D.C. as far as decent health care.
So you're talking about the fact
that... That's all I have to say.
Yeah, you just wanted to say that our politicians, our elected officials, have guaranteed health benefits, right?
Correct.
And until they have to...
Mitch McConnell didn't get a bill.
Yeah, definitely.
I guarantee he didn't get a bill.
Right. So until their benefits are tied to the same mess that the rest of us are, why should they act?
Yep. Yeah.
Exactly. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, CJ.
Thanks, CJ. I always wonder, like, because it's the same thing that we talked about last week with the North Dakota legislature voting to give themselves $10 more a day
per diem.
For their per diem 2 weeks after they had voted down extending free lunch for poor kids.
It's like they did it on purpose.
And it's just like when you don't work as an elected official. Or you don't get your job done, or you don't represent your constituents, and yet you still get your paycheck, you still get your benefits, you still get the cushy job, you still get lobbyists paying for all your things. You go from $33,000 net wealth to $11 million in less than 4 years.
Hello, Kristen Sinema.
Oh, yes. And
it's,
you know,
Kirsten.
Whatever.
There's a lot of variations of my name.
Oh, it's your name.
Well, no, it's just of the derivative of Christ... That name in girls' names.
Yeah.
There's Kristen. There's Krista. There's Christy. There's Kirsten. There's Christina. There's Christian. There's a lot of versions of that name, and I've been called all of them at one point in my life.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I forgot to talk to Laura about this when she was on the show, on the segment. We need to start calling Lauren Boebert Bingo Boebert, because this is a West Wing reference. On the show, there was the congressman from Western Colorado was called Bingo Bob. She is the representative of Western Colorado, Bingo Boebert. I need to make this happen.
I think you should run with it.
I'm going to.
I'm surprised no one has done that yet.
All my West Wing friends were so shocked that they didn't come up with it first, and I'm not that smart.
Are you going to hashtag it?
I've tried. No one cares.
No one picks up on it?
Your laughter, Jane, is so mocking.
Oh, it's not mocking. I think it's adorable.
Hashtag Bingo Boebert.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the character like on the show?
He was a nice guy, but he was kind of a dullard, you know? He wasn't as fiery as
Mrs. Boebert?
No. Oh, God, no. No, he was a guy who just like, you know, I'm here to get work done. I know what my job is. He became the vice president. He's like, I know what you think of me. I was an easy choice. You know, he didn't make waves.
Mm.
But he was played by Gary Cole, who was amazing.
Wait, who was the person you just named that I didn't know who it was?
Neil Gaiman?
Yeah, who is
he
that?
He wrote Sandman, as well as other comic books and graphic novels and books.
Makes more sense why I don't know who this is.
Gods and...
I know Stan Lee.
Good job, buddy.
I hope I know Stan Lee.
Good work.
844-967-2789. Anytime you want to check in, either by phone or text. We've been talking about raising the debt ceiling and entitlements. 414 checking in. The term entitlement is now used in a derogatory manner. Those using it that way don't understand what it really means. Something to which we're entitled, something that someone owes you. And that's exactly what it is. We prepaid for our pension, Social Security, and retirement, medical insurance, Medicare, and anyone who takes even part of those away is stealing from us.
That's the big problem, too. When the lockdown was happening, I had to convince my friends to take unemployment insurance. And they're like, I just feel like I'm going to be seen as... I'm like, no, that you pay into that. Mm-hmm. That's your money you're getting back. This isn't you being lazy. This is you getting a safety net on something you paid on already. Kidding. You know, that's something Republicans are amazing at. They weaponize these terms and they make you feel bad for them, or they try to make you feel bad. It's like, I'm going to take unemployment? Yeah, because it's my money. Give it back to me at a fraction of the cost that I'm making a week.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to have some fun in the next hour.
Ha-ha.
Why? Why? What time is it?
Because it's the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
You just love the fact you get it right every time.
I know. Now that I have it memorized. I'm so excited for our guest who will be here at the top of the hour after the news break. Justin Superstar, Eau Claire native, director, documentary filmmaker, and his film, Mom and Dad's Nipple Factory, which is just so fun to say, is having its world premiere and is the opening film for the Milwaukee Film Festival tomorrow night. He is here to talk about what the story is, what it was like taking a departure from other documentaries he's made to talk to, like, interview his family and tell his story.
And it's not what you think.
It's not what you think. We already cried during the trailer, so we'll play some of the trailer when we come back, but I'm very excited for this interview. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.